Welcome to Torah Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Chet, Chapter 48. Chapter 48 is the third in a series of Nevuot Legoyim, prophecies to the nation. In Perek 46, Yirmiyahu berated the Egyptians for their haughtiness. In Perek 47, Yirmiyahu chastised the Philistines for their cruelty. Here, in Perek 48, Yirmiyahu moves on to the Moabites and examines their society. Unlike the prophecy towards the Egyptians or the Philistines, Yirmiyahu seems intimately acquainted with the Moabite land. He describes each city and what is happening in it as they get destroyed. He describes how for many years Moab was undisturbed. No one tried to conquer them, so they became complacent in their invincibility. At one point, Yirmiyahu surveys the destroyed cities and just says their names, as if bearing witness. I'm reading from verse 21. U'mishpat ba el eretz hamishur, el cholon, el yitzha, vet meipat, vel divon, vel navo, vel beit divlataim, vel kiryataim, vel beit gmul, vel beit ma'on, vel kiryat, vel kiryot, vel bitzara, vel kol arei eretz moab harachokot vakrovot. He starts off and says, judgment is coming. And then he goes on and lists each of the cities that gets destroyed. There's an intimacy that Yirmiyahu seems to have with the Moabites that he just doesn't feel for other countries. However, no matter how great was the power and position of the Moabites, it is coming to an end. From verse 25, Nigda'a Karen Moab, Uzro'o Nishbara, Ne'um Hashem. The horn of Moab is cut off and his arm is broken, says Hashem. Just like the other nations that Yirmiyahu lists, Moab has their own sins to atone for. The first is mentioned in verse 7. Ki ya'an bitachta b'ma'asayich b'otzrotayich, gam atil kedi, v'yatza chamosh b'gola ko'anav v'sarav yachtav. Because you trusted in your works, Moab, and in your riches, in your treasures, you're also going to be taken, along with your god Chamosh, who's going to go into captivity with his priests and his officers. There are two issues here that Yirmiyahu is discussing. One is idolatry, the belief that there are other powers who run the world besides Hashem. The other is an issue of arrogance and complacency, thinking that because you have works or treasure, accomplishments and riches, that you're done. You don't need to be wary. You think, Moab, that these things will last forever. You think that you will last forever. Metzudat David explains that it was the things that Moab owned that actually literally led to their death. When the enemy invaded, the Moabites were too attached to their possessions, their horses, their cattle, their sheep, and their treasuries, that they couldn't leave them to run away. So instead, they stayed along with their possessions and were slaughtered with these goods. The love of money and the love of things is what caused Moab's downfall. And the thought that these riches made them invincible eventually brought ruin to the Moabites. The second part of Moab's sin comes in verse 26, and it gets more personal in terms of how it relates to the Jews. Yirmiyahu says, Hashkiruhu ki al Hashem higdil. Make him drunk, because he has made himself greater than Hashem. He's magnified himself against Hashem. V'sapak Moav b'ki'o v'haya l'schok gam hu. Moav will wallow in his vomit, and he'll also become somebody who will be derided, will be laughed at. Then the psukim go on in verse 27. V'im lo haschok haya l'cha Yisrael. Didn't you laugh at Yisrael, at those 10 tribes? Im v'ganavim nimtza? Was he... Remember when he was found amongst the thieves? Kimide dabrayach bo titnodad. Just the way you spoke about Yisrael, do you remember that? How you shook your head against him, you pitied him? That's what's going to happen to you. The story starts actually in the second pasuk, verse 27. The 10 tribes of Malchut Yisrael were exiled by the Assyrians. They were killed, tortured, and dragged away. And while this was happening, their next-door neighbor Moab stood by and laughed, shaking their head at the poor Israelites, mocking their fate. They then went a step further and took it out on Hashem, as we see in Pasuk 26, the first Pasuk that I read. According to the Radak, It says, Ki al Hashem higdil. It's not just that they look down on the Moabites, but they believe themselves to be higher than Hashem, above the petty defeats in the world. They believe themselves to be invincible, unlike those poor Yisraelim who made the mistake of believing in Hashem. Their God was stronger. And it was this feeling of invincibility that came from many years of stability and peace, that came from their many possessions and their attachment to them, that eventually led to their downfall. What makes this parak interesting, along with the rich detail about the cities and the landscapes of Moab, is Yirmiyahu's reaction to their destruction. Even after detailing why they deserve everything they got, and even after it has to do with the Jews, unlike the Egyptians or the Plishtim, even after sealing their fate with psukim, such as verse 30, where Hashem says, Ani yadati nu'um Hashem evrato, I know their sins, says Hashem. Lo kein, it's not true what he says. Badav lo bidayo lo kein asu. His boastings had brought him nothing. And Hashem seals their fate, and yet Yirmiyahu has such a strange reaction to their downfall. Unlike in Parak 46, with the downfall of the Egyptians, Yirmiyahu at the end of the parak caused Yirmiyahu to tell the Jews that they do have stability, unlike the Egyptian, that in the future they will no longer need to be scared. Here, Yirmiyahu says in verse 31, Al Kin Al Moav Ayalil. Therefore I'm going to cry out for Moav. Ula Moav Kulo Ezak. The whole Moav. I'm going to scream for it. El Anshe Kir Cheresh Yageh. I'm going to moan. I'm going to mourn for the people of Kir Cheresh. Then he goes on in verse 32. Umibchi Ye Azer Evkelach Hagefen Shivama. With greater weeping than for Yazer, I'm going to cry for you, the vine, the grapes of the vine that are in Sivma. Nitishotayich Avruyam. The vines, the tendrils of this grapevine, it was so mighty and beautiful that it crossed the sea. Al Yam Yeazer Nigao, it reached all the way to the seas of Yeazer. Al Kitzich Baal Bitzrich Shodad Nafal. And now, on those beautiful vines and on your beautiful figs, people have come to cut it down. Yirmiyahu goes back and forth in the next few psukim, describing the utter terror of the cities of Moab as they are captured, and then talking about his own despair. As we heard in those last two psukim, Yirmiyahu is crying for the destruction of Moab. He's describing their beautiful plants as if he's in despair at their destruction, the way he spoke about the destruction of Malchut Yehudah. Even though they deserved it, he's still upset. Yirmiyahu says in Pasuk Lamed Vav, Al Kain Libi Lamoav. My heart goes out to Moav. Even though he ends that same Pasuk, verse 36, with Al Kain Yitrat Asa Avadu. Therefore, the gains that they've made, the money that they made, shall vanish, which recognizes that it's their arrogance that brought them to where they are. So does Yirmiyahu feel sad, actually, about Moab's downfall? He doesn't seem to care about the downfall of Egypt. If anything, the Jews draw strength from their enemy's end. So why does Yirmiyahu speak of Moab the way he does? And speak about it in the same type of language as he speaks about the destruction of Yehuda. Or perhaps that's not true. Maybe he is rejoicing at the retribution that Moab is getting. That the fact that they derided Yisrael and they were jeering at their galut, at their exile, and now it's coming full circle and they're getting their due. So which one is it? According to the Radak, when Yirmiyahu says that he's crying for Moab, it's not actually Yirmiyahu who's crying for Moab, but he's speaking in the voice of the people of Moab, who are crying for themselves, for the downfall of their country. It's not him crying, it's them crying. They will weep for the downfall of Moab. Well, now this would answer our question. Yirmiyahu recognizes that the destruction will be hard on the people of the country, and yet he knows that it is deserved, in which case Yirmiyahu himself is not necessarily upset about the destruction of Moab. A different way to read this, as Rav Menachem Bula proposes, along with quoting the Radak, but he does bring a different opinion, is that Yirmiyahu actually is speaking in his own voice. What we see back and forth in the Psukim around the 30s is that Yirmiyahu wavers between noting the justification of the punishment of the Moabites and then feeling sadness, real sadness, at their demise. Why is this? Why would Yirmiyahu care about this next-door neighbor, this rich and haughty neighbor who got their deserved end? One answer would be that while they deserve their punishment, he still feels pain at the loss of their people and the death that comes along with their capture. Yirmiyahu would not necessarily feel the same way towards Egypt because Egypt was a very specific oppressor of the Jewish people, and they killed Yoshiyahu, who Yirmiyahu, if you remember, was very close with. And he also wouldn't feel this way about the Plishtim because their sin was cruelty, and it's hard to feel so sad about the demise of somebody who exhibits such cruelty. Another answer I heard from Rabbi Yair Shahak, and that is that Yirmiyahu recognizes that there are historic ties between Moab and Bnei Israel. Moab is the child and the descendants of Lot, the child of Lot and Lot's daughter, who brazenly named him Me'av, the child of my father. This brazenness reared its head throughout generations, and now Moab remains brazen in their actions, defying Hashem, saying that Hashem can't help Israel, putting their trust in Chamosh and their peaceful history. Maybe Yirmiyahu mourns them because they do have a shared family history. And this is backed up by the way Yirmiyahu speaks about their land, the way that he speaks intimately about their cities. While Moab deserved what they got, they're still family. And therefore, Yirmiyahu mourns them. Perhaps a third answer also draws from the family history of Abraham and Lot. Lot was an orphan who was raised for and cared for by Abraham. Abraham thought that he would impart to Lot his way of life, a life of chesed and one in which he followed the path of Hashem. Lot, however, parted ways from Abraham when he chose the bountiful land of Sodom over the nomadic tents of Abraham, which symbolized chesed, kindness. Anyone could come in to Abraham's tent. Sodom, on the other hand, was the decadent city of the civilization at the time, and one that didn't share their bounty with guests or passersby. Yirmiyahu sees this fateful choice of Lot choosing Sodom over Abraham play out again and again in Moab's history. They continue to choose their material possessions over the life of kindness every time. Perhaps what Yirmiyahu is mourning for and why he cries over Moab is the lost opportunity that Moab had for greatness. When he sees the destruction of Moab, he also sees the alternative of what could have been. Had Lot not chosen Sodom and had his descendants not continued to make that choice over and over for the rest of history. Unlike the other two prophecies that we've read so far, this one ends differently. Yirmiyahu closes the parak by saying in verse 46, Oy lecha Moab, woe is to you, Moab. Avad im kamosh, you are lost with your god Kemosh. Ki luchu banayach b'shevi ubnotayach b'shevya, your children, your sons, and your daughters are taken captives. And then in a tonal shift in the last verse of the parak, Yirmiyahu says in verse 47, V'shavti shivut Moab, v'achrit hayamim ne'um Hashem. I will bring back those captives of Moab and the end of days, says Hashem. Ad hena mishpat Moab. And this concludes the judgment of Moab. This judgment of Moab lasts only in this material world. In Achrit Hayamim, however, the end of days, a time that Yeshayahu describes as Nachon Yehar Beit Hashem B'Rosh Harim V'Nisa Migvaot V'Naharu Elav Kol HaGoyim, that time when the mountain of Hashem and the house of Hashem is settled properly in its correct place at the head of the mountains, higher than all the other hills, and all of the nations of the world stream to the Beit HaMikdash to learn from its ways and be judged by the ruler. And no longer, says Yeshayahu, will nations need to fight each other. They will put down their swords, they'll put down their spears, and they'll melt down their metal, turning it into agricultural tools. At that time, Yirmiyahu says, Moab will fix their evil ways and return to their familial roots and join with the nations as they stream up the mountain towards the Beit HaMikdash. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilui Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.